pleased to have been invited here. Just looking at the series of topics, is clearly this is a very eclectic and interesting group. And this, to me, the paper that I'm presenting is really a test of the one medicine hypothesis, which all of you are well familiar with. And so I started reading about health disparities because of my role working for underserved populations in an urban area, where we deal with underserved people as well as animals. And as a result of disparities, which is a big theme of this conference, people are much less healthy, they have less access to medical care, and have worse outcomes when they do get care when disparities exist. GIS, which is what I'm going to be talking about, it's my latest new toy, is an ideal tool to examine these disparities since they're often distributed geographically because people cluster by neighborhoods or minority status. Health disparities in companion animals are anecdotally reported. Any of us who work with companion animal populations know they're there, but they've really never been formally studied by shelters or rescues. Until now, as I say, they've been formally studied. So we would expect by the one medicine hypothesis to see these measures related. Here's an example of a health disparity that was studied using GIS. This is Boston, my hometown, and it shows the distribution of children with elevated blood levels. This was done by the Disparities Project and the Boston Public Health Commission. And I can assure you, by looking at this distribution, this is not random. It is clearly associated with minority and socioeconomic status. Why would you do an area-based analysis, looking at things by neighborhood? Well, it's becoming more and more common in public health, especially in the disparities area, because individual level data simply are not available. You can't link them to and if they are available, it's very difficult to link them to outcome databases. Neighborhood level characteristics, on the other hand, are much more widely available, and it is possible to link them to neighborhood level outcome characteristics. And there is a considerable body of research demonstrating that this is a valid way. This ecological approach actually stands in for individual level outcomes when the two can be compared. So it's a legitimate way to go. And again, certainly from personal experience, neighborhood factors are certainly associated with animal health outcomes. So just a very quick tour through GIS, since most veterinarians are not well familiar with it. It hasn't really been widely used in veterinary medicine. It's a system of hardware and software that helps you capture, manage, analyze, and display georeference data. And it allows us to view, understand, question, and interpret patterns that you might never see looking at things in tables or charts. And so we can do things like connect events or characteristics to places. We can counter-analyze them with respect to location and to distance. And we can examine and analyze any data that are linked to any of the above. So it's a very, very powerful tool. You've seen maps like this all over the place, and you may or may not know that this is done with GIS. Here's a map showing where unaccredited teachers are in LA County elementary schools. Here's heart disease rates. Here's spread of Salmonella typhimurium and number of overlapping hospice service areas in the U.S. So the use is limited literally by your imagination and data. A lot is now available online. You're going to hear a lot about the cloud. I was at a seminar last week that Estri put on and learned how to mash up to the cloud. And if you're interested in using GIS and learning more about it, Estri has got a great booth, and they're very, very helpful people. It's a great company to work with, and I have no financial ties to them. I've just been really impressed with the product and their support. So thinking of GIS, I think of it as a layer cake, where you have data, some kind of events. In this case, it shows customers. And then you have map layers. And there can be streets, there can be land parcels, census tracts, land usage, city buildings, literally transportation networks. Anything you can get into a map, you can layer. You can have as many layers as your software can handle. And the way this works, which is so cool, and this is what the software does, is you have events with data linked to them. And my case in public health, most of what you're going to have is probably street addresses if you're looking at human health issues. And you can connect them with GIS software to the addresses on a street, and then that's georeference. So latitude and longitude now gets connected to the street address. And once you've done that, I just think of it as a push pin, and you've pushed a pin through every conceivable layer that you've got. So you can connect things, and you can go across, you can go down, you can combine them, and you can just imagine the power when you've got something like the census tract layer with all the data that's available in U.S. Census. Because I've managed to push this pin through, I can now connect these events to that data and any other data in any other layer. So here's Boston. It's got 16 neighborhoods and 156 census tracts. And you can see that now I can connect to these census tracts all of the U.S. Census data. So I've got population, I've got ethnicity, I've got age, race, income. This data could probably wrap around this room. There's so much potentially available. And then here's cat intakes. So I have georeferenced, geocoded cat intakes to street address. And now because I've done that, and these street addresses, if you remember with those pins, are connected to the census tracts and neighborhoods, I can connect all of this data to those things. So you might argue, or you might ask the question, what outcome is the best measure of a health disparity, since there's lots of health outcomes we can potentially use? Well, premature mortality has been argued by some pretty well-placed people as perhaps the single best indicator of health disparities. Sorting out all the other things, at the end of the day, it's whether you live or you die. And that, I think, for my purposes, is very useful because shelter-associated mortality, which is premature mortality in animals, is the single largest cause of preventable death in companion animals. And it reflects this broad spectrum of societal ills that result in animals being relinquished, having an unwanted litter, developing a vaccine-preventable illness, sustaining a fight injury, or being hit by a car because they're not being appropriately managed. So it's a natural question, if the one medicine hypothesis holds, to suggest that those two should be related. Well, we were very fortunate. Serendipity in research is a great thing. And it turned out that the Health Disparities Geocoding Project at the Harvard School of Public Health had done this for premature mortality in people across Boston neighborhoods and census tracts. And they showed patterns that we thought were very, very interesting because the patterns of premature mortality in people intuitively resonated with what we thought was happening with animals. So we tried to replicate their study. And their definition of premature mortality was any person dying before age 75 without regard to cause. Our definition of cat premature mortality was any shelter-associated cat death, also without regard to cause or even vital status on intake, with the exception of owner-requested euthanasia for cause. And what we did is we downloaded all the records from the two largest sheltering organizations serving Boston. They're all computerized. There were 17,000 records for 5 years. We actually did manually check all of the street spellings, which is one of the 5 minutes. Okay, I got it. I'm in good shape. Against two different databases, we were able to geocode or match 87% of them successfully. And then we joined them to the neighborhood and census polygons, and we counted cat intake and mortality and census tract and compared them to census tract demographic data and human premature mortality from the Chen study. And this is what we found, that cat intake and mortality varied by census tract enormously within neighborhood. So if we went to a neighborhood like Dorchester, for example, you had both the lowest mortality of less than 1 per 1,000 to the highest mortality 7 per 1,000. So that showed us, which we hadn't realized, how incredibly focal this problem could be. And you could have a very low community right next to a very high census tract. So it really got us thinking about targeting. And as you might expect, cat premature mortality was associated with all the measures of human deprivation. Your relative risk is here. And you can see, again, no surprise, receiving public assistance, unemployment, crowded housing, families with children in poverty, et cetera, all significantly related. Tenfold differences were observed across neighborhoods, and this is the data we wanted to compare to the Chen et al. Study because they looked at it and reported it this way for people. So here's the graph, ta-da, and we were astonished that there was a highly significant linear relationship, 0.77 R squared, between the cat premature mortality and the human premature mortality. Boy, this is hard. And what was most interesting here was really a very provocative finding. South Boston, which should have had the highest premature, which did have the highest premature human mortality in Boston, had 50% of what was expected for cat premature mortality. And the reason for that was, well, I don't know the reason, but the thing that potentially could explain it is there was a low-cost clinic in South Boston, the Alliance for Animals, that provides affordable veterinary services for the public, targeting inner-city neighborhoods, poor, elderly, disabled, and homeless pet owners. So, conclusions. Health disparities were for the first time demonstrated for companion animals. We associated cat premature mortality with human socioeconomic deprivation. It was strongly and linearly associated with human premature mortality. One neighborhood with 50% lower than expected cat premature mortality was served by a veterinary clinic providing low-cost care. Whew. 12 minutes. Did I do it?
You did good.
Well, that was an experience. Do we have time for questions?
We sure do. We have 2 minutes for a couple questions, and then at the end we'll have questions we can give to the whole panel. How's that feel? So, questions?
Yes?
Have these findings been stimulated discussion of maybe mobile clinics and other ways to serve the community? How has the shelter community responded?
Well, I absolutely don't know how the shelter community is responding. What we're trying to do is we are targeting those sort of red hotspot neighborhoods now. And had it not been for the downturn in the economy, we would have had a much more ambitious program there, but we've had to scale back, we do. But now when we do our outreach in Boston, we are very much targeting those red hotspot neighborhoods in the middle of Dorchester and Oxford, and monitoring the numbers very carefully to see if it doesn't make a difference. Yes?
So for that one clinic, you said you're sort of hypothesizing that in this area that it probably would be this clinic. Do you have plans to test that, or do you have ideas on how you might want to test that?
Well, that's exactly going back to the other question. What we had hoped to do then was to expand our outreach in the Dorchester area, which is that's actually a very red hotspot community now, and we're doing it, we're just not doing it at the level I hope we'd be able to. So we are certainly testing it. It's probably gonna take longer than we'd expect to see a result just because we don't have the resources right now to push as aggressively. We're doing clinics every couple of months instead of weekly or monthly like we'd like to be doing. Yes, I'm right there, sir.
Do you have data that shows before that clinic existed that it was higher in that South Boston area? Or has that clinic always been there? I mean, is there a temporal relationship there?
The clinic has been there for a long time. It's been there about 20 years, and we don't have data going back that far.
And then my second question is, in terms of follow-on studies, have you had any consideration to looking at farm worker health compared to animal health on the farm?
I'm not sure this farm is 60 miles of it, not Boston, so I have. It's not an area that I know too much about. I mean, it's certainly a legitimate thing for somebody to consider looking at.
I'm going to cut our questions off, write them down. We're going to have time then, I'm sure. Thank you, Gary. That's great.